You're listening to the NetMums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Jennifer Howes. On this week's show...
I feel personally that it's pointless asking someone, if you're feeling sad, talk. It should be your duty as a friend or a parent to get that out of them.
But before all of that... Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode. It's officially sad season, isn't it? It's raining. Horizontal rain at the moment, if I'm honest, looking out the window. It's November. I'm not a Christmas lover, so everyone else is getting excited about Christmas, and I'm just like, oh, Christ, give me summer. Jen, are you all right?
What a Scrooge.
I know, I'm a total Scrooge. I don't care.
Well, I feel like I know it's really, kind of wintry weather because whenever the weekend rolls around, I want to get on my bike and go for a ride, and inevitably it's raining, and I'm too much of a wuss to then kind of...
You're not made of sugar. You can go out in the rain.
I don't know. You don't know that, Wendy. I am.
Well, indeed. Well, someone who isn't made of sugar, I hope, is our lovely guest. I'm going to let you do the big intro, and then we'll say hello.
Great. Yes. So this week, we're very excited to have as our guest, Roman Kemp. Roman is, of course, the popular Capital FM morning DJ. In 2019, he came third in I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. He's presented the New Year's Eve fireworks and won fans on Celebrity Gogglebox, appearing with his father, Martin Kemp, the former Spandau Ballet singer and EastEnders actor. He's also struggled with depression from age 15. During the pandemic, he tragically lost his best friend Joe to suicide, and he made a powerful documentary for BBC Three called Roman Kemp, Our Silent Emergency, which tackled the topic of suicide and mental health struggles, particularly for boys and young men. And now he has a new book called Are You Really Okay? That talks more about his family and the topic of mental health. Welcome, Roman. Thank you so much for being with us here today.
Oh, good. No, thank you so much for having me. It sounds like a very dark opening whenever people say why I'm here. I promise you it's not that dark. I still have some form of fun in me.
Well, we can testify to the fact the book is very fun to read. It's very serious, but it's not all doom and gloom.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, you know, so many people you look at people when they finish reading it and things like that, and they were like, oh, it's not all about suicide then. I was like, no, I'm not a doctor, for one, and two, I don't think I can physically talk about that for, you know, an entire book. And I think that what I wanted to achieve is with the book that Are You Really Okay? Is I wanted to be able to have obviously, you know, all my kind of how I've gone through grief and how I've experienced it, and understanding of mental health and understanding how my own mental health is such a huge factor in my life, but also moments in my life that give me the thought process that I have now, and the people that have kind of given me those things as well. So, you know, there's a lot of like fun stories in there as well as sad. So it's good. It's a good mix.
So what was the experience like of actually writing the book? Because like you say, there's some really quite hilarious stories in there, and there's also some really powerful, personal, tragic stuff in there. Was it a roller coaster to write? Did you just kind of like,
so
were you like this?
Yeah, I mean, I can't, like, my attention is so poor. I can't physically, I wouldn't be able to physically write a book. I wouldn't be able to do it because I write everything down. We started out and I was like, right, I'm going to try and write everything down. And then all the bits I want to put in, and it's just a mess. And then I was like, okay, well, I'll write it down. And then I send it over to someone and then they can help me out. And then that was a mess. So what we ended up doing is I worked alongside a lovely lady called Susanna Galton, who, you know, I've referenced first page in the book, you know, like she's been amazing. And Susanna basically became my therapist for a kind of almost 6 month period. And we would have like, you know, we'd try and do it to like almost like maybe once or twice a week, just sit down and do like 1 or 2 hour chats based on what kind of topic we're going to approach. And I found that was a really nice way. And Susanna did it so well because I said to her at the beginning, I was like, you know, I want this to be obviously first person, but like, I want it to be what I say. not what someone else. Do you know what I mean? You see so many books these days that get released, and you know, someone else has just put a story together.
Yeah, it's clearly not literally the person talking who.
Yeah, you can almost hear my intonation in it. So you know, she's done a phenomenal thing, and for someone else that, you know, suffers with forms of ADD, you'll know that like it's almost impossible to sit down and get everything in the right order. So I was so grateful to her. So yeah, in terms of, you know, the process, it was like therapy. It really was. It was something that I needed to do and something that I'm so pleased to have done.
Well, you have a lot of very sobering statistics in the book. Suicide's biggest killer of men under the age of 40 in this country. That 3/4 of men feel they can't confide in those closest to them about their problems. Having, you know, done the book and done research, why do you think young men aren't reaching out to those around them?
So a lot of the time, you know, we look at why people are killing themselves. And that was the first question as to what I wanted to find out is, you know, I lost my friend to suicide. And like 90% of other people that lose their friends or families to suicide, you don't get left with any note, or you don't get left with any inkling as to why. But that's because the reason is so simple. And the reason is, I don't feel like I'm where I should be in my life yet. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, I'm going to take my life because it's not doing the path that I was told it was going to be, or where I think it was going to be. You know, it's setting these kind of like high standards, you know, and I think that that's something that is now unfortunately flowing younger and younger. And when I say younger, I'm not talking 18-year-olds. I'm talking 10, 11.
Really?
And yeah, for sure. I wrote an article over the weekend about suicide, and someone said, replied and said, suicide rates are actually getting better. You're saying this problem's getting worse. Well, it is, because you're now just moving it away from men aged 35 to 50, and you're moving it to 12 years old to 25. If you ask me, those are, you know, how is that even possible that kids are choosing this as a life option? But the reason again behind that, you look at reasoning, my life isn't where it should be. And then you think about the pressures that are constantly put on people from a younger and younger age, you know, and one thing that, you know, I'll clear this up now, because this will be the number one thing I guarantee when people hear me speak about it, they'll go, oh, social media. It's not just social media. It's everything. It's the pressures that are put on in schools. It's the pressures of life. You know, it's the pressures of the social aspect of school. You know, again, I always, my focus now, honestly, is so based around what are schools doing, you know, because the only way you're going to stop this is by getting in there as quickly as possible. You know, I'll break it down into kind of like 3 stages for you to understand this. Suicide, you can look at it from 3 angles, right? One is prevention, second one is intervention, third one's postvention. So postvention, right? This is after someone has just taken their own life and what happens. So no suicide is the same as the next, but averaging around is around 180 people are affected per one suicide. So if you fan that out, so like if someone were to take their life, 180 people are affected personally about that, and that can trigger certain mental health thoughts. So those are 180 people that already you need to look out for. The way how you sort those people out is through post-traumatic therapy, you know, making sure there's psychologists around, making sure there's therapies around, you know, checking in on those people, etc. You know, bubble wrapping those people. The one in the middle is intervention. Now, all of us on this podcast right now are in that category. And what I mean by that category is we are in X Factor terms, we're the over 25s, right? So we are the group that, unfortunately, all of us speaking now are pros at wanting to put up our own mask, and pros at being able to put up a mask that you would not be able to tell.
Yeah,
I could lie to you point blank and tell you I'm absolutely fine, and you would believe me. Where it gets interesting is prevention, because you can get in there before kids even develop the idea of having a mask. But they just don't know how to talk about it. They don't know how to explain what they're feeling because they've never been taught about it. And the thing is that it's my firm belief that at some point in your life, you will go through some form of depression, anxiety, or state of panic, something where your mind has kind of taken over. We all know that that is going to happen, but yet we are not taught anything about those moments or how to deal with those moments. We are taught, however, things like CPR. We are taught things like, oh, draw the diagram of a heart and show how this goes to this and don't eat this food because of this. All of those steps we kind of understand later on in life. Avoid these foods because it does this. Especially when it comes to biology. What doesn't make sense is, why am I learning about my heart so much when realistically my brain has just as much power to do me as much damage, if not worse? So that's where intervention for me is the most interesting part. And going back to your point, I know I've strayed away from it. The reason I think, you know, is affecting so many men is because, one, we don't have those tools. That was never given to us. And what we're realizing is that, hang on a sec, the pressures of life and those moments where we have to decide, shit, how do we deal with it? They are becoming earlier and earlier. So you've got a problem with your dishwasher or something like that, right? Right. I go over to the cupboard, I get out the manual, and I look through the pages to find, you know, how to fix this. There is no page explaining what I need to help or how to do it. So yeah. How am I meant to know what to do? I just leave it broken and it gets worse over time.
So what's the solution then? Help in schools? How do you think we need to get to kids, young boys especially?
Yeah, because then you kind of, over time, that problem will then just get worse and worse. And if you've got nothing to understand it, one, or even understand how to fix it, you know, that's the thing that we're seeing as well, is that so many guys that kill themselves, you know, they don't even address that they've got a mental health problem or believe that they have a mental health problem because they don't understand mental health. So they don't even know in the first place. And for me, how it needs to go. It needs to get in schools as early as possible.
And how do you, I don't know, you say in the book that it's still, even now, there's a pressure for boys and young men to be the strong ones, to bottle up their feelings, to never ask for help. As a parent, that terrifies me. Why do you think that persists? Because we try and teach our kids to be more open. We try and teach them that it's okay to share their feelings. But you're right, it does still persist. And I see that divide in my 11-year-old's class, that the boys are the ones who shouldn't cry. They're the ones that they think they should be strong, and it's still there. How do we tackle that?
Yeah, for sure. I think what you need to understand is that that will be there for a very long time. Because if you think about, you know, men, or, you know, men in general, from even from cavemen times, it's always been kind of their job to go out and hunt. It's always been their job to take on this thing. The way even how testosterone works as a chemical, you know, it wants to overpower, wants to be able to be dominant, wants to be able to be powerful. I think that kind of ideology is going to take a very long time to dissolve, in terms of like the idea that, you know, I should be this way. But all I'm saying is that's fine. If that's what you believe, that you should be those ways, that's okay. However, talk about it. If you are feeling the pressure of that, talk about it. And I understand that that's really hard to do. And, you know, especially like, you know, I feel personally that it's pointless asking someone, if you're feeling sad, talk. It should be your duty as a friend or a parent to get that out of them. Like, and you know, there are lots of different ways that you can do it. And I understand, you know, a lot of people struggle with being able to have those types of conversations. But there is always a way. There is always one way that you find. And it does take a little bit of time. You know, that's why the easiest place to start was, you know, what I was taught, just that two okay rule. You know, you ask someone at the beginning of a conversation, how are you? And then at the end of the conversation, you ask again, and you make that the point, and you say, look, I know you just glazed over it, but how are you really? You know, that's that question on the front of the book isn't a question for the person reading it. It's say this to your friends. You know, it's something to learn. And I think that, you know, when it comes to those young guys, I do think it's going to be you know, look, we can do things that are good, which is, you know, you get rid of phrases like man up or things like that, and blah, blah, you know, or just get rid of that. I think, you know, you've got to remember that it takes time.
It's definitely a generational thing. I'd love to see you trying to have this conversation with my 74-year-old dad. He'd just be like, no.
Exactly. No, but but my granddad was heavily depressed. My granddad was heavily depressed, you know, and it takes time for, you know, like even things like racism, you know, for, you know, if you go back to your granddad's time, that was just an accepted thing, like, which is mad, you know, and even the pupils just accepted it. Then if it was your generation, or you know, my generation, in terms of it, if a teacher were dare to ever be racist, it would be, you know, looked upon, the school would deal with it. Nowadays, if a teacher is racist, it is a bollock. Do you know what I mean? It's horrendous. Like, so slowly over time, that generational thing will hopefully get better. But I just think it's not about, okay, it's accepting that boys and girls will go through this stuff. We can't, you know, skirt around it. Give them the tools, you know, accept mm-hmm. that they will go through the depression, they will go through the anxiety, they will go through the social insecurities. Just don't ask them, just give them the tools.
Yeah, I think that's really a powerful idea, you know, that it's going to happen. It's normal to go up and down, and it's normal sometimes to be very low indeed. Mm. Also that I think because girls are encouraged more to think about their feelings, talk about their feelings. When you were speaking earlier, I was thinking, you know, lots of boys and men, they may not even know what's wrong with them when they get really down. Like being able to look at how you feel and define it. Just because it's always this idea that you're not supposed to feel this way. What do you think about that?
Yes, you know, that's the thing. It's like, I truly believe that this acceptance that depression doesn't really exist is very strange. Like, you know, this acceptance, you know, the thing I was so sad about over even over the pandemic was, you look at all of the adverts that came out, you know, or, you know, about covering your mouth and all that jazz and blah blah, there was a complete lack from, you know, whether that be the government or anyone, thinking about people that are stuck on their own. And I don't mean that in a loneliness sense, I mean that in a mental health capacity. You know, I think that weirdly suicide rates in the UK actually went down in 2020. And why my thinking is this, you know, I mean, look, it's almost impossible to, you know, if I was to take a guess, this is how it would look. So suicide rates in 2020 came down. If you think about 2020, there's something going on. Everyone's at home. Everyone's together. People are talking to one another. Everyone's job is in limbo. Then it gets back into 2021 and you look at the back end of 2021, when people start going back into the office, they start going back to their lives that they really live. And it's that people don't enjoy, you know, and that's that I thought that stat of the fact that it went down in 2020, but went back up in 2021, because people were coming to the realization that, hang on, I don't like my life. I don't want to go back to my life. You know, it's so sad. And again, it's that safeguarding thing of depression. You know, we're going through a huge pandemic of mental health, you know, and I still don't see any adverts on TV. I don't see anything, but it's always charities that are doing it. I just find it flabbergasting.
You dedicate the book not just to Joe, but also to your mom. And, you know, are there things that she's done or your parents have done or that people have said to you that you thought were particularly helpful in terms of times you were struggling with mental health problems?
Yeah. I mean, my mom always used to have so many ways of doing it. She used to do this thing. She was like, I mean, a couple of them are good, a couple of them a bit not so great advice. Well, I mean, it was good for me, but whether or not it's right for other mums, I don't know. She basically said to me, you don't have to do your homework if you cook dinner with me. So I used to cook dinner with her and she'd be talking to me whilst we're doing it, slowly just bring in mental health type conversations, you know, and things about, you know, but what you have to understand as well is that this is, I come from a very open family, like very open in the sense of not just, you know, oh, we talk about sex. I mean, open in the sense of, we're not, I wouldn't say we're closed-minded, we're not intelligent by any means, but you know, for instance, my mum used to teach me about Reiki, when, you know, healing powers and Reiki and angel cards and all those types of things. And there were certain bits I just thought, shut up, man, this is all rubbish. But you know, the idea of, you know, mental health and understanding positivity, you know, my mum kind of started it out by saying, you can get what you want from things if you put it out there into the universe. You know, my mum always used to get to me, you know, so I used to sit there and go, Arsenal win, universe, I'm telling you, can you get Arsenal to win the Champions League? You know what I mean?
I'm not like, sure that's quite what she meant by it, but hey.
Yeah, precisely. But then it gives that ideology of, okay, get it out, say it out loud. Do you know what I mean? Talk about it. Yeah. And, you know, I kind of, you know, we used to do this thing where, you know, my mum would then slowly introduce me to other things like, you know, just positive affirmations or gratitude. So I already had a little bit of a connection with, you know, that side of life. But my mum did used to do things like, you know, if we cook and you don't, you cannot do your homework, but we'll have a conversation. You know, just talk to me. That's all she used to say. She goes, I never hear about your day. I want to know, you know, and when I talk to her about my day, she'll say to me, okay, well, then that person said that. How did that make you feel? Do you know what I mean? Always ask me how I feel. And also, I guess, validating, not never telling me how to feel, but just validating how I feel.
That's the slight difference, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, even just acknowledging and saying, I hear you, instead of trying to either, I think as a parent, we can often, I have this problem where I try to fix it. And I'm like, oh, maybe you could do this, or maybe you could do that. Instead of doing that, just saying.
But also, yeah, but also questioning it, you know, and it's almost like she used to set me a challenge and kind of be like, why do you think you feel like that?
Mm.
And then it's like, well, why do I feel like that? Is, you know, and then maybe I bring up something to do with an insecurity, or do you know what I mean? I try and map out, you know, our brains are good for one thing, and that's solving problems. That's what our brains want to do. So if you give your child the reason, say, that's interesting, I wonder why you've reacted like that to that.
So what about your dad then? If your mum was the positive affirmation one, what was he up to?
My dad and my sister are always, my dad and my sister are very lucky. They have the most happy-go-lucky outlook on life ever. My dad is very open to things, but I never used to feel like I would have a proper conversation because my dad would always hand it to me.
Yeah.
Anything I said was right. Anything I did was right. Anything, you know, and sometimes they get to a point where you kind of sift through the bullshit. And you just kind of go, hang on a minute. No, it's not right. You're just telling me it's okay. So I found it tough to have those conversations with him. Also, he had never really had those conversations in his life. My mum came from a family that was hugely, like, just in the wrong place. You know, she had a father who was abusive to his wife. You know, he had a mum who was raising six kids essentially on her own, and constantly, you know, cheated on and whatever and all this jazz. And you've got kids that all just hate each other. And so my mum came from this highly, you know, toxic environment and is a very emotional person. So she had to learn about her own emotions pretty quick. And I think she kind of found power in that, you know, and that's what she wanted to give to me. You know, me and my mum are both very sensitive. We're very, like, if, and what I mean by that, I don't mean like, oh, if something grazes me, I cry for a week. I mean, we're sensitive to environment and other people.
That
emotions.
Also makes you attuned. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You're kind of, you're tapped into other people's emotions.
I hate it, right? If I can't deal with, it's like going to sleep on an argument. I can't do that. If I'm in the studio and one person's had a bit of a rift with the other person, I can't sit there because I'll feel that.
Mm. You kind of pick up on the vibes.
Yeah, but in a bad way, in a way that it annoys me, you know. And so, you know, all of these things are kind of things that I've taken in from my mum. And you know, my mum used to do little tricks, and this is, you know, the best trick. I'm sure you both know this. But from a boy's perspective, the best way to do it is if you have those car journeys or if you go for walks or anything like that, if you have dogs, make your son take the dog for a walk with you. you know, and as you're walking, then bring up those topics. Anything that you can do to talk about a topic like either suicide, mental health, etc., anything you could do in a way that isn't with eye contact is sweet spot.
Best conversations ever are in the car because you don't have to look at each other. I'm with you there.
But exactly. And so many people still don't really do that. And, you know, they worry about, you know, I hear a lot of parents worry about saying, should I talk to my kid about suicide? Because, you know, suicide is so scary and I don't want to give them ideas and things like that. Unfortunately, as I said earlier, 70% of the people that do take their own life don't even think mental health's a thing. Like, don't even think, you know what I mean? They it's crazy. You know, it's the idea of suicide and the way how we talk about it. The fact that we're not talking about it is why people are killing themselves. And yet people still say it like a swear word.
Yeah, it's said in hushed tones. And
yeah, they come up to me and they go, do you think I should talk about suicide to my son? And I'm like, you can say suicide, don't worry.
It's like in Harry Potter, don't say Voldemort. But actually, you're right. If you keep talking about it in a whisper and not actually talking about it, then how is anyone supposed to get their head around their own emotions?
Dumbledore in Harry Potter says fear of a name only increases fear of the thing itself. You know, so it's, and that's, you know, from Harry Potter, which I've never taken a quote from in my life, but it's really true, you know, because we're saying it in that way, everyone's so scared of it. And you're throwing this like taboo around it that is then, you know, but it's not just that. For the people that really do feel suicidal, they're so scared to talk about it themselves. You know, businesses, you know, even businesses these days, they're being told, and I really agree with this. I really do. I agree with it. Businesses these days, they're being told, if your employee is going through a mental health breakdown or is going through a mental health issue, the first question you should ask them is, have you considered killing yourself? Have you thought about taking your own life? By addressing that first, you are stopping any dance around the subject. You are, all of a sudden, you are making an issue a reality in someone's head. Someone that has been fantasizing about suicide, which one in four men do, by the way, one in four men have thoughts about suicide, which is completely normal. But by bringing it into the real world and not just in their head, diffuses it so much, because all of a sudden you go, oh, no, actually, I'm not going to kill myself. I'm not. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I just think that it's so powerful just to be able to say it. That's the worst case scenario. Say it. Have that conversation.
I mean, I think that statistic, even one out of four men, I would be surprised that, you know, if it wasn't more like 95% of people at one time or another might have had a fleeting thought when they get very low of thinking about it, not necessarily contemplating it, or, you know, ideation or planning, but just going, would it be better if I weren't here? That seems like a completely normal thing to think.
It's completely normal. It's completely normal. Life is really, really shit sometimes. It's completely normal and understandable to feel like that. But again, it goes back to what we said. Everyone's having those thoughts, but no one knows how to kind of get rid of those thoughts, because your brain will take over. Like, you know, your brain wants to take over. And again, like, I go back to it, what I said, it wants the problem solved. And if your computer is just breaking and breaking and breaking, what do? You pull it out the plug at the mains. And that's unfortunately what men are doing. They're just going, can't be bothered, bang, pull it out. Like, that's what they're doing. And and there's a lot there that, you know, it's just, it sounds so simple, but it, you know, unfortunately it's not. You know, not one suicide, going back to it, is the same. And it's just, it's a weird, weird world.
That's that is true. Very true. Very, very true.
I just want to talk about the book a little bit in terms of, it is, it's a fantastic read. It's obviously, you know, it's very meaningful, and the place it came from. It's also interesting. You talk very openly about your upbringing, about your family. There's some really amusing bits. And also you talk about having gotten abuse along the lines of people saying, you know, somebody with your privilege has no right to be talking about suicide or mental health, which is really funny. It's a bit like, ooh, people like you, who, you know, I don't know, famous parents, privileged life, y'all never have any problems, in a way. That's kind of baked into our ideas about mental health, isn't it?
Yeah. Of course, but problems are relative. Like, you know, everything's relative. It's like, in, you know, it doesn't, suicide or depression or anything like that, again, doesn't have a uniform that it has to follow. Mm. The idea of what a suicidal man looks like is so far from what people think it is. Mm-hmm. Like, a suicidal man will be that person at the party that's actually really fun and really full of joy, and they are the people that, you know, have got quite a lot going for them because they're working really hard. But unfortunately,
and they could be achieving, and
yeah,
you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah, and you know, that's what I learned the hard way, which is it doesn't have any form of uniform that you can go, because, you know, before people just think, oh, it's someone that is in therapy all the time, crying all the time, you know, wants to da 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 da, but it, realistically, it's the people that you don't expect, and that's the only correlation I had with any form of suicide, which is, it, when does the people that you least expect become the person that you most suspect to take their own life?
Often too late. That's the problem.
Always too late. But I think, sorry, going back to your question, for me to be able to write a book about something that is very personal to a lot of other people other than myself, you have to be very open. I've always been a very open person, like, in terms of, you know, my upbringing. But I think, you know, again, that's what I wanted to shock a bit more.
But the online comments can be brutal.
Yeah, but I deal with that on a daily basis, and that's fine. Like, I honestly, like, I'm very fortunate. I'm very fortunate of how I process that certain thing. You know, the only time I would ever really feel up down about is if I've hurt someone. You know, as if I've upset someone. People commenting on my way of life or who I am, I don't really care. Like, I really don't. But if I've ever hurt someone, then that would be, you know, that's something that I would want to address. But I think when it comes to, you know, online comments or things like that, I love that, you know, the way how I've been able to talk about, you know, wanting to take my own life or, you know, having fantasies about it, about how I would do it, etc. I look at myself and go, I'm thinking that, and I am one of the most privileged people in this country. Mm. I've got a great job. I've got parents who, yeah, probably if I went broke and if I lost all my job, I'll go live with them. Like, but it doesn't make a difference. Like, it truly doesn't. And I'm telling you that firsthand from someone in that position. Because your brain is the thing that is killing you at the end of the day. And your brain will make you feel like, no matter how privileged you are, it will make you feel just as bad as someone that doesn't have any of the privileges that you have.
Right. Mental health is not about, like, who deserves it.
It's relative to the situation.
Yeah.
You know, it's my goals are different to your goals. But if I'm not achieving my goals, I can feel just as bad as you do about you not achieving yours.
Let's talk about what else you might be doing. I've heard rumors. Well, not rumors. You've said that you're in talks about Big Brother. Talk to me about Big Brother, please. I also want to talk about Prince William, because you've met him. Yeah. And is he nice? And I also want to know who you think is going to win I'm a Celeb, please.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah. Well, let's talk Big Brother first. I mean, I think the quote in the paper was just that obviously they've spoken to me about it because they already asked about it, and I think someone already printed it in the paper. All I can say is it's a phenomenal show. It would be an honor to be able to do it. I love it, and I you know, that's what I would always want to do. I think whoever hosts that show needs to be a fan of the show. You know, that's all you can say, is whoever hosts that show has to be a fan and has to, you know, understand what people can go through in those scenarios. So that's Big Brother. That's all I can say.
Succinctly done. Thank you, sir.
The rest is not in my hand. What would you like to know about Prince William that's not going to get me beheaded?
Is he a nice chap?
I've been fortunate enough to meet a lot of the royals. I never, unfortunately, got to meet Her Majesty the Queen, but I have had nothing but lovely encounters with all of them. Very understanding, very much. You know, my thing in life is I love people that do their job properly. You can see that they want to do their job properly. You can see that they have a responsibility and they're willing to stand up and do that, take that responsibility. And I think that's a very admirable thing. You know, I understand people have certain opinions on royals, and again, that's fine. This is just my opinion. you know, my opinion is I view them in a nice light. I can only go off when I've met them. And, you know, King Charles is lovely. I've had
still
the honor
sounds of, weird. Can't get better.
It does, doesn't it? I've had the honor of meeting him on several occasions. He's very nice, very personable, very funny. Like Prince William and Kate, for that instance, very empathetic people, you know, and I think as someone that, you know, I would say I'm an empath in that sense. You pick up on other people that are like that. And you can see people that are genuinely kind people. Mm. And that's, you know, what I can say about them. And Prince Harry, again, lovely guy, quite funny. You know, I've lovely encounters.
Now, you haven't answered my other question. Who's going to win I'm a Celeb?
Do you know what? I'm tied between one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life and someone that is just a legend, like a hero. I'll start with a hero. So the hero is obviously Jill Scott.
Yeah.
Right? I think Jill Scott, she's a winner. And from what we've seen of her so far in the show, she's clearly, you know, she works on a team mentality. She'll love that element of it. So I really, really, you know, I think I can't see anyone else winning it over her. But I do love Charlene as well. I think Charlene is great. I think Charlene could potentially be top three. However, I would love to see Mike Tindall win it.
I would love to see Mike Tindall win it.
Yeah. Mike Tindall is hands down one of the nicest, top five nicest people I've ever met in my life. And I include my dad in that.
It will be interesting.
I have to say, yeah, watching the first episode where they're in the boat and they pull up to that submerged other boat. And he's like, okay, I'll go in. And just like waded in. So, yeah.
I really hope we see more of an emotional side to Mike. Because I think if we get that, then he will win.
He's pretty unflappable though, isn't he? Like,
that's what I mean. I'd quite like to see that. But yeah, I do think Jill Scott is great. I thought Charlene is, you know, she would be great to win. But there's some great people in there. Do you know what? It made me really, really emotional seeing them some go in there. Because, you know, I say it in the book, it was one of the happiest times of my life. And seeing it there was really cool.
Do you have any advice for people in the jungle?
Yeah, I think it sounds ridiculous, but it is those things of don't argue, understand it is a TV show, you know, always know and always know that, like, you know, my thought process is always this show is they kiss you on the lips, then kick you in the nuts.
Or make you eat the nuts, depending
exactly.
On.
That's it. So it's always going, okay, they've just done something really nice for us. Expect hell.
That is the best tip ever.
Yeah, that's what it happened. You know, it happened in the show when they opened up on episode one and they're saying, you know, on their first episode, they were talking about, you know, VIPs and they're like, great. And then bang, you know, so yeah. It's certainly a show that you need to be wary of.
Thank you, Roman. What a lovely way to spend a Monday morning chatting to you.
Thank you
for joining us.
Thank you. So, yes, everyone, you can see Roman's new book, Are You Really Okay? In stores, and order it. Do check it out. It's a very important and also very enjoyable read. Thank you so much, Roman.
Thanks, ladies. Thank you.